Welcome back to the Speedy G podcast. We apologize for our like 3 week hiatus. We're going to try to get back to weekly podcasts. So today we got a lot of the Speedy G crew here, so we'll try not to be too incoherent and loud. But we're going to start off with training updates. So let's start with PK over here. What are you doing?
I am training to get back into shape after not running for a long time. Yeah, just getting back into shape and hopefully doing CIM in December, if that pans out. But yeah, just basically getting back into shape.
And for anyone that doesn't know what CIM is, it's a marathon, but you should know what that is. All right, Ross, what's up?
I don't even know, man. I'm just running running circles around the track.
Yes, track is not canceled, PSA. You can run your own meets, just don't get caught. So Ross is peaking right now, basically. He's doing all out speed workouts, and his peak non-race is the first week of May, so that'll be fun. We'll come back to you. For me and David, but we'll both talk about it, but we're both kind of training for CIM in December as well, and we had a bunch of races lined up, but they're all moved, obviously, so we don't know. So far, SF Marathon is not canceled. They're saying they're going to wait until whenever to see if they can have it or not. Basically, I don't think they would cancel it until like late May, and it's the end of July. So if that happens, we are running that. Other than that, we're just building massive fitness and trying to get super fit for CIM, which is like, what, December 6th or
yeah,
whatever, like first Sunday of December. So, I guess, I don't know, give them an update of how your training is actually going, like tempos and all that stuff.
Tempo-wise, it's going, well, everything-wise, it's going great. Just progressing every week, you know, raising the mileage. Not doing any workouts that, you know, are unbearable or uncompletable. Just all a gradual build just to get stronger and stronger. Just solid coaching.
So David's up to 5x mile. He's up to 5 mile tempos, and it doesn't look that hard for him. So it's looking good. Ange, what are you up to?
Well, all my races got canceled, so hopefully Yuba Gold 50K is still on.
October.
So we've got a ways. And then CIM at the end of the year, and hopefully just see if I can find any filler races in between them, just to, you know, keep it up.
And you were wanting to, like, PR in the 5K this summer, right? Like, hopefully those rate. And, I mean, if they're still canceled, we'll just do it ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if it's on Strava, it counts. So, me and David will just pace you. Yeah. But I think summer races will come back. I'm hopeful. So, we're going to spotlight on Ross for a second because he's the only one that's peaking in the next couple weeks. So, what are your PRs in the 800 and the 1500? And what are you trying to hit in the next month?
Oh, man. My 800 PR is 157 from several years ago. 5 years ago? Goddamn. And my 15 is 354. So I'm trying to get that down to the low 350s. And then 800 PR? Who knows? We'll see.
It's going down in 2 days, actually. So we'll find out. Conrad is one of our other athletes. He's racing. His PR is also 157, and he's probably going to run a massive PR in 2 days, so that'll be fun. So one of the topics that came up for basically all of us is that everything's canceled. So there's delays on races. NCAAs is canceled. NAIA is canceled. Everything's over. So we obviously are super into running since we're doing it post-collegiately, and so obviously nothing's canceled to us. And so kind of what we're doing is we're putting on our own track meets. We're staying within the rules of what our county is enforcing, but we're giving people the opportunity to PR anyways. David French and I are not racing track, so we have the ability to pace everyone because it doesn't matter because we don't care about our race because we don't have one. And so we're pacing the women, we're pacing the men, every distance. We're doing 800 through 5K, basically whatever. If someone wants to race a 3K, we'll pace them. It's fine. So for those of you that want to race, obviously you can. Like, just go race your teammates. Like, do whatever is okay in your county and go do it. They can't really cancel track. I know it sucks if you run a PR and it's not officially on T-First or athletic.net or whatever, but you can put it on Strava, you can have someone film it, you can do certain things to make it official. So that's kind of the solutions that we came up with. And as far as the delays go, I pay attention to the news a lot. It seems like maybe we'll open back up the economy in May. And if that happens, I think the summer races might be back. But I'm a little worried about like road races because a lot of them are very compacted and like everyone's close to each other. Everyone's grabbing these water cups and spilling them all over each other and breathing and coughing all over each other. So I'm a little bit worried about road races, but we'll see what happens.
Another thing that made me think about is that how all of the marathons in the spring, all the big ones, mm-hmm. have been moved to the fall. So it's like London, Berlin, Boston, New York are all within like...
Hey, don't forget Shamrock.
Okay, my bad. They're all within like a month and a half of each other. Yeah, so it's going to be really weird to see like what marathons are super competitive with all the pro runners and which ones are just going to be super
slow. Does that make them closer to the Olympics too? Because I'm not familiar with like the dates. Are they closer to the Olympics now or farther away? Like, are people going to be more likely to not do them because they're worried about the Olympic marathon?
I honestly have no idea.
I haven't looked at the new dates for the marathon.
I know like the beasts that just race like 5 or 6 marathons a year aren't going to be affected, but some people can only do like 2 and that's it. So that'll be interesting. The main topic that we're going to talk about today, and we're just going to kind of float ideas out there, is how to fix pro running. I will say that it's been going well. I think I remember when the Millrose Games first started being televised again. I guess New Balance was really sponsoring it and pushing it, and the views were going up by like 100,000 people every year. So people are like watching track, but the Melrose Games is more exciting in my opinion. It's indoors, there's less events, there's shorter events, there's like off events, and there's a huge problem. Me and my friend, the coach over at Good Athletics, were talking about this, Chris Good, about how... You know, there's pro runners that make like 40K a year, which is insane. It's like the minimum salary in the NFL is $500,000. Obviously, the NFL makes way more money than track ever will, but we think there's ways to fix all of that. And so we're going to go over some of those today. The first one I came up with is revealing pro athletes' salaries. I know it's kind of like personal or private, I guess, but literally every other sport, you can just type in Google and see what people make. I think that would be pretty cool. I think if someone's being way underpaid, it puts pressure on whatever company is underpaying them, because everyone knows, like, hey, this athlete runs this and this, and they're making like 60 grand less a year than this athlete for no reason. I think that's a good solution. Let's go over some of these other ones. I don't want to just talk this whole time. What are your guys' opinions on this stuff? USATF should pay all their athletes. What do you guys think about that?
Definitely. Like, without a doubt, especially since, like we were talking earlier before this, is that all the other organizations like the NFL and stuff like that, they all pay the athletes. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that USATF should do that as well, especially for, like we were talking about earlier, all the non-sponsored runners from just no brand, and that would help them a lot.
Yeah, perfect example of that is Allyson Felix. She landed on an unsponsored year, I think because she had a tough pregnancy, but I can't remember. It might have been she was sick or something. And everyone knows she has a ton of gold medals and American records and all kinds of stuff. But she just happened to not be sponsored by Nike. And she got like 4th or something at USA's off of like 8 weeks of training and made the world's like 4x4 team. And I don't think she was sponsored, or she was sponsored by some like Target clothing brand or something like that. So she was sponsored by Athleta.
Target.
Might as well be.
There was a time when Allyson Felix was, she was in like a lawsuit with Nike over her rights during her pregnancy.
Right.
So I think it may have fallen on that year.
Yeah, and so stuff like that's crazy. I mean, it's their job, it's their livelihood. Everyone else has maternity leave, so... Like, why can't runners too, you know? Then it's a whole other thing with Nike. Obviously, they're a lot bigger dicks when it comes to sponsoring people. Like, they actually will take money away from you if you don't make the USA team, even if it was because of injury. Yeah. Like, no other brand does that. But still, like, none of that stuff should happen. There should be a safeguard. And so we were thinking...
Also another thing, to throw on the whole brand thing.
Yeah.
We were talking about this a couple weeks ago when we were doing a run together, that there should be... allowed multiple sponsorships per like track athlete and stuff like that, since they're only allowed to just wear like Nike or New Balance or stuff like that. They should be able to throw in a bunch of other crap on their
like
jersey.
Well, they do that with pretty some much. Of yeah. them, like with Rabbit and Hoka and stuff like that.
I think Rabbit's sure. more likely to do it because they don't have like a shoe tied to them, so then they don't
yeah.
care.
Yeah.
But like, everyone should be like that. And it, I forgot to mention, like, the two people that were pioneering all this stuff, one of them's retired, Nick Simmons. The other one passed away, David Torrance. They were like trying to change all this, and then
yeah.
when they stopped, no one really picked it up. So I don't really know.
Who Our could... time to shine.
Yeah, I mean, no one listens to us. But like, maybe like says. Craig Engels, since he looks like he should do it. He should do it.
He would definitely be the bro to do it.
Yeah.
He'd get sponsored by a beer.
Yeah, Budweiser. But yeah, like I get like the old school people that are like, oh, that's not what track's about, but. You should want these people to be able to train all out all year, especially if they're competing with a bunch of people that are probably doping, namely like East Africa, where you can get EPO because you don't feel good, basically. And they need to be able to run full time. Like, it needs to be their job. So I don't see anything wrong with like having the logo on your left chest, right chest, and then like on your back, basically. Like,
mm-hmm.
what? That's not going to tarnish track. And so we were talking about that. Some athletes have snuck it in there a little bit, like Lolo Jones used to wear a Red Bull headband
mm-hmm.
and she just wants to wear Red Bull, but it needs to be way more than that, and
yeah.
That'll help for sure.
Nick Simmons used to have his logo on his bicep.
Used to wear those, like
yeah.
there was that one time he like auctioned off a piece of his body and someone paid like $10,000 or something for him to wear their logo at USA's.
Yeah,
and that was a good way to like sneak around it, but
yeah,
nothing's really happened since then.
I think I bid like $20 on that one. That was on Twitter.
Seriously?
Yeah, but then it was obviously quickly
what logo was he gonna put?
Overdone.
Just your face.
I can't remember. That would be awesome.
A drug needle.
Another point would be bigger bonuses at USA's. And the reason for that is another thing. Like, it's a safeguard for people that happen to not be sponsored. So perfect example of that is Jake Riley. He was not sponsored when he made the USA team for the marathon. I'm pretty sure he got a bonus from USATF or whatever. But normally, like, I knew Fernando Cabada, and he got, like, a $50,000 bonus when he set the American record in the road 25K. And so I'd imagine you get the same thing, and that was from his it was from Reebok or whatever. That's I imagine it's the same thing if you make the USA team. It might even be more. And because he wasn't sponsored, like, Brooks dropped him, like, 4 months before the trials, he missed out on, like, 50 grand, which, for some people, that's, like, how much you make in a year.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think USATF has money, and they should safeguard athletes from that too, and that's one way to do it. Also, like, if they set an American record or a facility record or something like that, there should be, like, big money in that.
Yeah, especially considering, like, this happened a couple years ago at Worlds, where, like, people didn't run the World's Marathon just so they could compete in, like, Berlin and London and
yeah.
stuff like that. But just because it pays not even close, like,
yeah.
it paid, like, substantial amount more.
And you have to pay it. You have to pay to bring your medal back. You have to pay taxes on your medal.
Yeah, that's so dumb.
Yeah. Imagine if, like, you barely made enough to go to Worlds, and then you won a medal, and you came back, and you had to, like, pay for it. You know? So that's what... Worlds
that's
has been
nice.
Like that for a long time. Like, I know Daniel Tapia, the guy who won CAM back in, like, maybe 2014 or 2013 or something, he ran for Hartnell in junior college.
Oh, yeah.
He ran at Worlds in the marathon, and he wasn't even... I don't think he was our like top 10 marathoner, but he ran at Worlds because no one wants to do it because of what you just said. They'd rather do Boston and make money, you know?
Yeah.
What else do we got on there?
Next one, we got pro team races and relays.
Yeah.
So, like, big names like NOP versus Speedy G, you know, stuff like that.
Yes.
They
we would win.
Yeah.
There is no NOP.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There's no
us NOP. Versus Salazar.
Yeah.
That's it.
He can probably still take us. All by himself.
He's a fast boy.
Yeah, but I mean, there's groups out there, right? I mean, I don't even know if Brooks Beast is still a thing anymore, but it was. They had a decent amount of guys and girls on their team. Obviously, 10 Men Elite is a really good team. They could race Bowerman Track Club. And just all kinds of stuff like that. So we want to see like a big track meet that is all scored and everything, just like college, basically.
Yeah.
It should be scored. There should be winners. Like, there could even be prize money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now that Eugene has that crazy stadium, their ticket prices are a lot more expensive. So if people come and sell out, which they will at Hayward because they love track, it's track town. you use some of that money to make a prize purse, and then whatever team wins, you know, they get the money.
Yeah.
And so that'd be sick. I think it says on there more relays.
Yeah, they do relays. They do like the club nationals for cross country. Yeah. And that's basically like a college or high school or like any other cross country meet. But I think it would be cool to see that in track.
Yeah, they should definitely do it in track. And the relays, one of you guys talked about the elimination miles, those are really cool. But relays would be awesome. Like, everyone wants to see a DMR with like a bunch of pros racing each other, or even like the sprint medley relay where you go 200, 200, 400, 800. Like, that would be really cool, because nowadays the talent for sprints is kind of spread across the brands. There's New Balance, there's Puma, there's Adidas, there's Nike. So that'd be really cool.
There used to be, I don't know if they still do it anymore, but there used to be the World Relays, which I think the last ones were in Bahamas.
They still do it. Yeah. It's really cool.
But I think we should have that more in the States, country by country. Yeah. Doing that.
Dope. Yeah, it'd be sick to have it like in the US. They tried it with that thing they did. I can't even remember the details of it, but they basically assigned randomly people to states, and so then it was like California versus Oregon, and it just had random people on the team, and it was cool. I thought it was really cool, but like, I guess they just didn't think it out very well. I don't think there was any stakes, and part of the problem to me is that like pro coaches are way too like, you know, rightfully so, they just want to win Olympic and world medals, but they're way too cautious. They're like, I don't want my athlete to run that race and get injured. Mm-hmm. And like, I can understand that, but still, it's like,
if you made it worth their while, it would come.
Yeah, and freaking NBA players play 82 games a year. And like, what's, I don't even know baseball, but it's well over 100 games. Mm-hmm. And then NFL is a super rough sport, and they play like 20 games if they make it all the way to the Super Bowl. So, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal to have them race more than like 3 times before USA's. Especially for a relay, like, no one's going to pull their hamstring trying to beat someone else from the other club. Like, true. You know, they can just have fun.
But at the same time, the risk is much higher because you're, it goes back to how much you're getting paid. You're only getting paid a little bit every meet. So if you run too many meets and you miss out on those chances, you just run really mediocre races and not peak for a whole bunch of them and win all of them, then like, you make no money.
Yeah, that's what sucks.
Yeah.
They need to all be making more money. So let's, what else do we have? Oh yeah, so name on the back of jerseys. That's in literally every sport. Have you guys been to USA's, like at Sac State or Eugene or anything?
Yeah,
so there's always a USATF booth, and all there is, and there is stuff that says USA on it. And I'm pretty sure none of us have made a USA team. So it's kind of weird, like, it's not appealing to me. I never wanted to buy any of that stuff.
I went to high school meets that had better shirt designs.
Yeah, I would buy the ones that said like the USATF Championships, Eugene, Oregon, because it was like memorabilia or whatever. But other than that, like, they need to have jerseys that say Bowerman Track Club and it says Centrowitz on the back, or Quigley or whatever. Like, if they did all that, that's money that could go right back to the pros and even just into USATF itself to make more money, basically. So I think that would be really cool. I don't see how that like devalues like track or anything. Because I think that was one of the things that would come up when Nick Simmons was pushing for all this, is like all the old heads were like, no, like, you know, Pre wasn't even sponsored, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, well, he lived in an RV and he worked in a bar and he had to do all this stupid crap.
Got welfare checks.
Yeah, and he was, wasn't he racing like, wasn't Lasse Vieren like sponsored by his country to where he didn't have to work for
it? Well, I mean, that was the thing about like Eastern countries, is they were like kind of pro. They just had like a bureaucratic job where they did nothing all day and then they trained.
Yeah. It was easier on them, basically. Yeah, for sure. And so,
yes, it does.
You know, I think basically the standard salary for an elite marathoner is like 70K from what I've heard. Track, it can be a huge range. I think there might have been an article on Let's Run about it. Actually, yeah, it wasn't even that old. It was like 3 months ago, about the range of like what athletes make. And it can be super low. Like, if you're a steeplechaser and you're always getting fourth at USA's and never making the team, you're probably making less than like a road marathoner. And then
that's one of the reasons a lot of people move from track to the road.
Yeah, for sure. There's more money. There's the road circuit. Like, there should be a track circuit just like the road. So there's the USATF road circuit, and they have obviously someone couldn't have enough range to win all these, but they have everything from the mile to the marathon. And so they have like a 12K, they have a 25K, And that gives them opportunities. Like, Parker Stinson won the 25K and set the American record. So, you know, like, he made his whole year's salary in one day, that day. Yeah. Which is awesome. There's no opportunity like that for track. All you can do is hope that you make the team. And, you know, every other year, there's not even a team to be made. It's just USAs with no worlds.
Because even, like, Diamond League doesn't pay that much, does it?
To win? It does, but, like, it's so hard to win Diamond League. Like, there's no way an American that's not the top in their event is going to ever win. Like, the only person that has a chance right now for middle distance and up is probably Brazier. Like, he could win the Diamond League, maybe. But then they started taking some of the events out of the Diamond League.
I know. So, yeah. They're going to lose their sponsorships, too, because they're not going to be seen on TV anyways.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, we need the Diamond League in the U.S., or we need some sort of league and some sort of bonus structure and all kinds of stuff like that. So, those are our thoughts on that. I don't know what episode this is, but thanks for listening to it, and we'll start bringing you guys them more often. Next week, we will let you know what Ross and Conrad ran at our invite. We also possibly have someone trying to break 14 in the 5K, so that would be really cool, and we'll let you guys know if that happens. Thanks for listening. All right, welcome back to the podcast, CJ. Thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of big things went down with you over the past couple months. Let's start off first with a big announcement, I guess. Did you sign a contract?
Yes, I did. Yeah, so it's been an interesting couple months, obviously, just with everything going on in the world. And I've had a lot of big changes personally. But it's been like a weird time to kind of announce everything. But yeah, so after the trials, maybe 3 weeks after or so, I signed a contract with Brooks Running. So I'll be representing them moving forward. I actually already was representing them as part of their Hometown Heroes program that they had leading up into the trials. So, you know, I was racing in their kit. But now I'm, you know, kind of like one of their, I guess, professional runners, you could say. So it's really cool. I always thought that I could be in this position, but then after college, it didn't really seem like that would be a possibility. And it was kind of just, yeah. So it's just amazing to be in this position where I can, you know, like make money running and, you know, be representing a brand that I really like. So it's really cool.
Yeah, definitely, dude. Big congrats. I know that's like everything that we daydreamed about when we were little kids. Did you think like that you had a shot to go pro like on the track when you were at ASU and just kind of never imagined that it would be in the marathon? Or did you kind of have that in the back of your head the whole time?
When I was younger, yes. When I was at Arizona State, no. Going up through high school, I mean, I felt like that was maybe a possibility, you know, because I had pretty good success in high school. I always knew it'd be a long shot, but then when I got into college, I mean, just some of the struggles I had in college, it just really, I mean, there was no rational way I could think that I could ever go pro. I wasn't anywhere near good enough. I never really thought about the marathon though. So it is kind of surprising. I mean, in college, I would have never thought that I'd be running pro as a marathoner. Like, that was not on my radar at all. Even though, I mean, I did feel like I had unfinished things in running and, like, I could be great one day. I just had no idea what it would be like and if it would ever actually happen.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like maybe before Evan Jaeger came on the scene, you might have saw, like, a glimmer of hope in the steeple, because American steeple was kind of like, you can almost go pro with like an 8:25 even, but then Jaeger just came in and like brought it way, way down from that. And everyone was like, oh, this is what American steeple should be like.
Yeah. He was already on the scene when I started steepling, even when he first started, I mean, my redshirt junior year at the time, the Olympic trials standard was 8:40. And then the year before, or the trials before, 8:40 would have got you in. And then that year, like, way more people than, because I think they took 24 or 28 people. and way more than that ran under 840. I think you ended up having to run like 836. And then yeah. It's just basically gotten faster pretty much every year. So yeah, initially I was thinking, oh, I can maybe make the trials in the steeplechase. And that was pretty reasonable. I had ran 845. And so, you know, 5 seconds isn't a huge jump. But yeah, I never really ran what I thought I could run in the steeple. And then I would always just get weird little bang up injuries. I'm sure like every steepler gets. And I probably wasn't a natural steepler. I'm not real flexible and I have kind of short stubby legs. So I don't know. I mean, I had some success in it, but I wasn't a superstar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you'd definitely be on the shorter side for steeple, but you would be, correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't you have been like the second professional Buchanan alum? Wasn't like Kyle Alcorn or something like that a professional?
Yeah.
Went to Buchanan?
Yeah. He went to the Olympics actually for the steeple. So
yeah.
Yeah. I guess there is some tradition there.
Yeah,
but I think he was a lot more of a natural steeplechase than me. And he ran like, I think he has, he went to Arizona State as well. So there's even more connection there. But I believe he ran 820 when he was at ASU. So it's a little bit different caliber than I was.
Yeah. I never knew he went to ASU too. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was, I think he was a part of the team when they won indoors. Indoor nationals, and I think he won the 3K indoors, and I think it was the same year they won as a team as well. Yeah,
that's cool. So as far as like with Brooks goes, I mean, I remember when Shadrack went over from ASICS to Brooks, he told me that he kind of had to join Hansen's, I guess, even though he wasn't really going to move out there, and he said that like kind of their new contracts are where you almost have to be a part of a team. Did they ask you to like officially get a coach or like be an unofficial member of any of the running clubs or anything like that? Or are they cool with you just keep doing your thing because you're doing so well at it?
Yeah. So they didn't really ask. They basically are just letting me continue to do what I've been doing. And part of it is, you know, because of the way I've been training, it kind of lends itself to doing some longer stuff too, you know, maybe some like 50Ks or even a 50 miler in the, you know, kind of more longer term. And I think that that's part of what they kind of wanted to get into, kind of like a little bit of that ultra scene. And just, you know, the way I train, that's kind of a natural, probably where I'm going to be headed at some point. I mean, I'm still going to be focusing on the marathon for sure, but I'll have the ability to do some other things in the future. So yeah, I mean, as of right now, I'm going to be training kind of similar to what I've been doing and, you know, just taking advantage of, the way I can train and do some other stuff in addition to the marathon.
Yeah, for sure. That's really cool to have that freedom and that trust from your sponsor. So, that kind of takes you to the trials. I mean, you said you're still going to be focusing on the marathon. I mean, I would think, to me, you've got to be, I mean, I know you personally, so to me, you're a favorite for 2024, but I think even for other people, if you show consistency over the next 3 or 4 years, like you're going to be a lot of people's favorite to make the team for sure. Well, most of the 6 guys ahead of you are pretty old, honestly. So like, let's get into the recap. I mean, tell us about the race and everything, dude.
Yeah, I mean, so going into it, I mean, top 10 was a big goal. Obviously, I wanted to make the team, but just, I mean, from what I had done, making the team was going to be, you know, pretty hard, but I thought there was a long shot possibility I had. But top 10 was like, that's going to be really solid if I can be top 10. So going into the race, I felt good going in. I mean, training had gone about as well as I thought it could go. And when I got there, I mean, it was just really fun the whole weekend just leading up to it. I was there with my wife, Chelsea. She had qualified. So, we were going to be running together and, Atlanta Track Club just did a great job putting it on. I mean, we had every meal they had for us basically. And there was like over 700 competitors. So it just,
right.
They had like all these buffets and it was like, it was just really easy. They made everything really easy and all of our like packet pickups and they had to like check our shoes, check everything about a uniform, because there's all these regulations, even for your warm-up clothes, that I had no idea about. but that was all – it was so seamless. I mean, with over 700 athletes there, like, I didn't wait more than maybe 5 seconds everywhere I went. It was just, like, wherever I had to go to check in or do whatever, it was just right when I showed up, someone was there, took care of me, it got done. Same with, like, you know, you turn in your water – your bottles that they put out on the course for you. That whole process took, like, 20 seconds for me. Obviously, for the Atlanta Track Club, it took hours and hours and weeks of preparation. But, yeah, for the athletes, it was just incredibly simple. So it made going into the race, I just, you know, it just calms nerves because everything was just taken care of well. And I just felt really good going in. I mean, it was so cool being on the starting line. I think I was, like, right next to, like, Chris Derrick and well, my whole line, there was a bunch of fast people, but I know I was just standing right next to him. And then right in front of me is, like, that whole front group, like Galen Rupp and Bernard Lagat was, like, I mean, all the all the good people, Opti, like, everyone was there, just, like, I'm touching them. And I'm just standing there, you know, you're just standing there the 10 minutes before the race on the starting line, and I'm like, this is all these guys I've watched for years and years I'm now racing against. And in my mind, I knew, like, I can beat pretty much all of these guys too. Like, this is crazy. How is this happening? How am I in this spot? Yeah. So basically a little recap of the race. The race went out. I tried to just kind of relax the first mile. And then I knew my plan going in was I wanted to run the downhills just at same effort and not really hold back. So when we kind of turned the corner and we got on the Peachtree, Luke Pasedra kind of made a move to the front. And I was back a little ways. I was probably in, like, 50th place or something. But when I saw him go, I was like, oh, cool. Someone's going to run the downhills. And it was windy. So I was like, well, I might as well go with him and then just draft off of him. Because I didn't at that time, is a mile into the race. So I didn't know what the pack was going to do, if they were just going to run really conservatively or if they were going to run hard too. So I didn't want to take a chance on being in the pack. I wanted to make sure I ran the downhills, you know, like, not holding back. So I went with Luke and just kind of sat behind him for the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles. And that kind of got me engaged in the race. And it was just, it really calmed everything down, because I'm like, okay, now I'm just running. And it felt really good to just kind of be out front running with him and not having to do any mental effort. I wasn't going to lead at all. So yeah, and then the pack ended up catching us, and then I'm like, okay, I'm in now. The pack's going to run fast, so I can just kind of, you know, it's going to be an honors race. So then I just tucked into the pack and just tried to zone out for as long as I could. And then I think Rupp made a move. Well, some people had broke away, but Rupp really made a move around, like, halfway, and it kind of broke the race open at the end of the second loop. And then that's when things, like, kind of got a little bit hard, where it's like, okay, now I'm racing a marathon. It doesn't feel quite as good. and, like, that 16th mile is really hard. And that's when things really opened up. And, like, the two packs really got separated. So I was in that second group, really just trying to hang on. Cause I knew once we looped back around and got to the downhill section, I'd be good. Cause I felt I could run downhill better than most people. So I just tried to stay on. I kind of got detached from the pack a little bit on those uphill miles. But I stayed close enough that when we got back on the Peachtree on the third loop, I could catch back up and just sit in the pack. Yeah. And then I used that downhill section, and it goes all the way to about mile 20. And then you have 6 miles left. And, Jake Riley, so he was in our group, and right when we turned around Peachtree, I didn't really know what happened at the time, but looking back, I figured out what happened, because we were all in a pack. There was maybe 12 to 15 of us, and we literally turned around at the corner of Peachtree, and then everyone was just by themselves, like, almost instantaneously. And I was like, what the heck just happened? It was like,
yeah,
because Jake went hard, and and you start going uphill, and then everyone just kind of split up, and then some people pushed really hard for that next mile, and I just kind of, like, maintained – I just stayed constant, and I think I was around like 20th place or so. And then after that initial mile of going really hard, everyone started to come back besides Jake, obviously. And then I just picked people off until the finish. Around 23 miles, I moved into the top 10. And then I was able to pick off two more guys, like right at the, with about a less than a mile to go. It felt good.
Yeah, for sure. It's very interesting to see like how many people you can pick off in the last 10K if you're just keeping it together, basically. Like, I did not know that you were still in like 20th at like mile 20. So that's pretty crazy. I mean, once Rupp really broke away, kind of all the coverage just went to him, you know? And so yeah. I'm really interested in the rest of the race, especially if, like, I know Rupp's going to win. It's almost like, okay, I kind of want to see the rest, you know? So it's really cool to hear that. Obviously, people kind of know now that you do a little bit longer of a runs than other competitors. And you did have a good point that it's more like time on your feet, and you running 30 miles in Fresno time-wise maybe might not be that much more than someone running 24 up at altitude in Flagstaff or something. But do you think that like that contributed to you high mileage, high long runs, high volume all the time, you being able to hold on the last like even 3 miles better than other people?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume so. I mean, you want to believe your training gives you the edge. Almost all of my long runs were a marathon or more. And I pretty much all my long runs, I close pretty hard. I was trying to close them, you know, like under 4:50 pace or so. I had practiced out like running really hard at the end of a long, long run. The race really wasn't any different for me than like a training run. It was just like, it gets pretty hard and then you find a way to finish well, or at least like maintain effort. I think I knew that I was going to run good, and like I probably wasn't going to blow up because I just run so many long runs. It was like I do this every week, so like it's not like this race is going to be any different where I'm just going to explode the last 10K. It was just kind of a matter of, in my mind, it was just, can I close averaging under 4:50 pace the last 10K and make the team, or am I just going to average around, you know, 4:58 to 5 flat that last 10K and be top 10? And that's kind of how it was. If I could have ran with Jake the last 10K and ran as fast as he did, you know, then I could have been with him and been, you know, second or third. But I just kind of ran that, kind of just maintained the same effort a little bit. So that was good for seventh. My training and race kind of played out almost exactly how I thought it would go. Obviously, I want to figure out how to get to that next level and be able to close harder. This was my first really big stage marathon like this. So I guess, you know, I have some time to learn.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, a part of it might just be age, honestly. I mean, prime age for a marathon can be like 31 years old, and you're like, what, 26?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Super young for a marathon. So really cool to see the insight of like the actual race and what went down the last 10K. Talk to us about after the race a bit. Like, how was it? I think your family was there, right? As well, obviously, as Chelsea. And also on the other side of that, did you have any of these guys, these veterans, like coming and talking to you and being like, who the heck are you? Or, hey, I saw you from Pac-12. Like, you know, congrats. Because I think a lot of people that weren't paying close attention were probably shocked that you took seventh, you know? So what was it like after the race?
After the race was, I don't know. It was kind of weird, actually, because when you finish, there's like no one around because the athletes were in this fenced off area. And when I finished, I mean, the top three people, they kind of take aside because, you know, they do all the stuff with them. And so right. There was only three other people in front of me that weren't whisked off. And so I was kind of just by myself for like, at least 15 minutes after the race because there's just kind of no one there. And then you go back to like the tent and grab your stuff. But no one's really there because not a lot of people have finished yet. And the fans can't get into that area yet. So it was weird. I'm just kind of like, and you're also really tired. So it's like you can't move that well. But yeah. It was actually a really cool moment to kind of have by myself because I was just like, I just got to kind of soak it in and be like, wow, like that actually happened. Like I mean, there's been so many times I've gone into big races, like knowing that I could do really well. But I mean, it's just like, you know, for example, like being at like Wisconsin and NCAAs or yeah. And thinking like, oh, I can be like top 10. Like I've never been anywhere close to top 10, but I think I could still do it. And then it's like I end up being like 60th or 70th, which was probably more realistic. So going into this race, it was like, I think I can be top 10. 20th to 30th is probably most realistic. But, you know, so then when I'm actually 7th, I was like, wow, like this happened. And I just was, I don't know. I mean, I was just kind of like crying to myself, but like just so many emotions. And it was just really cool. So then after that, my family was able to make it into this little, they have a little section for family and stuff. And then Chelsea's parents were there too. And we waited for Chelsea to finish. And then we just kind of all hung out there and yeah, just a lot of emotions. And it was just a great time. I didn't talk to like a ton of people after. I mean, most people just kind of went off with their families and, you know, I didn't see tons of people after the race, but I did remember I was at the little awards thing, and I remember Scott Fawell like came up and said congratulations, and I had met him on my visit to Portland in college, or when I was in high school, he was in college, but I hadn't really talked to him since, and so I was kind of surprised he even remembered that. But yeah, he just said like congratulations, and it was a great race and everything, so that was nice, especially because, I mean, he's been a guy I've been watching and kind of following since college, and it's been great to see his progression and what he's done in the marathon. And obviously he didn't have the race he would have had wanted to, but he was still, you know, very congratulatory of others, so that was cool. But yeah, and then I took a picture with Dez. She went to ASU, obviously, and I had gone to like the Brooks PR Invitational when I was in high school, and I had just signed to ASU when I went to that meet, and she was there, and so like I like took a picture with her, so it was kind of like a cool thing. It was like 10 years later, like it's like kind of like the same picture but in a totally different setting, and now we're both running for Brooks and had both gone to ASU, so that was cool for me, and I've always been a huge fan of hers.
Yeah, for sure. That's super cool to just have that come full circle, both do a full career at ASU, and just, yeah, that's awesome. Let's see. So moving on from the trials, I guess, you are still a junior college coach at Clovis Community College, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and then did they just bring you on, like, as a full-time professor?
Yeah, so I had been a part-time professor and then coach, and then now they just hired me on as full-time faculty. So now I'm part of, like, the PE Kinesiology Health Department as a full-time professor, and then obviously I'll still be coaching. But so that's really exciting. It kind of gives more stability to my – just to what I'm doing, and kind of like, it's like, okay, like, cause when you're part-time, you don't really know what's going to happen in the future. And, you know, it's like, if other full-time jobs come along, it's like, you know, you may have to leave. So it's just comforting knowing that, like, okay, I have a full-time job now, and hopefully I can stay here for, I mean, it's where I want to be. So hopefully I can stay here for the rest of my like teaching and coaching career. It's just relieving, and I really love Clovis. It's just a great college, and like all the staff on campus is just they're just great people. I don't know, it's just a really great place to work, and I'm excited because it's just a, for me, it's a good job that's really conducive to running. I think if I was just, if I didn't do anything else besides just run, I don't think I'd be very good. I really need routines, and I need things to like keep me in routines, and I need other things to do because my mind just gets really obsessive, and I need like things to keep me balanced. And so this is kind of like a perfect thing where it's not a crazy, crazy demanding job. And, you know, I'm not traveling all across the country like I would if I was coaching D1 or something. But it's kind of like that perfect blend of, you know, I have things to stimulate me in other ways. And I think coaching really helps me as a runner. So that's another good thing. And but it also allows me to train when I need to. So yeah, I'm really excited because I really believe that it makes me a better runner. And obviously I love what I do. I mean, teaching and coaching is great, and I'm doing it at one of the best places, in my opinion. So,
yeah, for sure. Definitely congrats on that. I mean, doing that is almost like a dream job in itself. Like, if you weren't able to run professionally, I think coaching junior college and being able to be a part of the faculty is almost a dream job for a lot of other runners as well. So having the best of both worlds is really cool. So what's ahead for you right now? It's really weird. Like, I wanted to run 2 marathons this year, and now I don't even know if the one I'm signed up for now will get canceled or not. So what's it like for a professional runner? Like, are you just getting really fit? Or are you kind of just maintaining and waiting for things to come back? Or what are you up to?
Yeah. So the past month I've been just not doing a ton, I guess. I think part of it is good because I basically since last summer I've been going pretty hard. From around like the end of July to CIM, I trained pretty hard, and then I couldn't really take any time off in between CIM and the trials because they were so close. So from basically July to like the trials, I was going pretty hard, and maybe I had a few somewhat down weeks, but not really. So it's kind of been like an extended break where, you know, I've been doing some running, but I wouldn't necessarily call it training. And I'm kind of starting to transition back into like actually training again. I'm not in great shape right now, but there's also like there's no races or anything soon.
Right.
So yeah, but I think that is something that I have to do because I can train. When I do train, I train pretty hard and I enjoy it. But I've also found like when I do kind of take extended time off, I don't like it, but I think in the long term it's better. And I know it doesn't harm me. I mean, when I stopped running after college, I was not training a whole lot, and then it didn't take me a long time to get back into like real good race type shape. So yeah, I think it's good for the longevity of my career to have months or two that are really kind of low key. And just cause there was so much excitement that's happened in the last like 6 months, I think that I really needed this kind of time for everything to slow down cause I think I could have just kind of kept riding the high and, you know, had another good marathon or so, but I think eventually like my body would have got tired. So this kind of just, I don't know, just cause I mean, with all the excitement of being hired full time and then like the trials and all the coaching stuff, and then we're buying a house now too, it's just like there was so much. And if I was like continually to just keep with that high level of training, I probably would have just been exhausted at some point. So yeah, I'm just kind of getting back into it now. Hopefully there'll be fall marathons. I really want to run a fall marathon, possibly Chicago. It's on my birthday this year, so I'd love to run that on my birthday because it's usually a fast race, and it's like, I don't know, you have to run good on your birthday. So,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about Chicago too. But it's a lottery if you're not elite, and I looked and it's already full. So I think I'm going to do Ventura, but I don't think Chicago will get canceled. So it'll be really cool to see what you can run on that course after running the trials course, which was so hilly, you know?
Yeah. I know I'm hoping that I'll run faster on a flat course, but it was weird because the trials, like it didn't feel the hills didn't feel that hard. And I don't know if it was just I was feeling really good that day, because I'm not really a hill runner. I've never been good on hilly courses. But the inclines, I think the grade they were at were good for me. Or at least I was at least average on the uphills with that specific grade. But then on the downhills, I was so far above average that I think it, like, I don't think I was running faster than I would on a flat course there. But I think, like, because some people were saying, oh, it's 3 minutes slower than a flat course. And I don't think that was true. I don't think I was running 208 that day. But who knows? I mean, if I can run 208, I'll take it. So
It kind of, if you can relate it to like cross country, it kind of reminds me of Mount Sac. Like, I don't think those hills are that hard, but it's like something like over 800 meters of the course, which isn't even a full 3 miles, is like steep downhill. And like, once I figured that out, I was just like, well, I can just bomb these downhills and run faster than people that are technically better than me, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would say the Mount Sac hills are hard, but yes, you can run really fast on the downhills, and there is more downhill on that course than there are uphills.
Yeah, for sure. Like the one coming down from the switchbacks is so long, and then the one coming down from or is so steep. It's like those hills suck. Like Poop Out Hill sucks, but like the other ones, it's like just get up them and then you can just fly down.
Yeah. Well, the only thing, the good thing about that course is every uphill is immediately followed by a downhill. So, if you can just maintain on the uphills and then really know how to run the downhills, then yeah, you can be good on that course. But the hills are, I always struggled up the hills.
I thought it was easier than Woodward because like, dude, training in Exeter and Visalia, you just run on a flat canal every day. So I hated Woodward for some reason.
I liked Woodward, but I had a lot of good races there. So that's probably why I liked it. And Mount Sac, yeah, I only raced twice and they were both just kind of okay.
So you talked about a little bit about ultras maybe in the future. Talking more on like the immediate future, do you think you would like get on the track and try to run like the trials or the USA like 10K or anything like that? Or are you pretty much done with that?
Well, I was thinking about doing that this year, actually. But obviously, yeah, that didn't happen. So I don't know. We'll see next year. I mean, yeah, I definitely do want to run on the track and I want to run a 10K on the track. Maybe even a steeple again on the track. I was teaching our athletes hurdles and I don't know. For some reason, I feel like now that I'm coaching it, it just seems so much easier to do personally. So I kind of run a steeple again just to like at least run under 840 just because it really bugs me that I never ran under 840 because it doesn't seem that good. I don't know if I'll ever run one or not, but I definitely want to run a 10K. We'll just kind of see how things go. And yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think it could be relatively successful. I mean, your mile speed like isn't that bad for being, I mean, I would say you're a marathoner now. Like I think the marathon's probably your best event, but like didn't you run like 402 or 403 or something for the full mile?
Yeah, I ran 403. I only ran the mile a few times in college, but yeah, my best was 403, but my second best is like 410 or something. So I just had one good race, but I never raced the mile, so I don't know. I would like to break four one day. Just my brother-in-law Seth is if you want a training partner to break four, he's trying to break four right now. So So I don't know. Maybe one day it's just such different training. It's hard. I don't know if I'll ever break four, but I think I do have natural speed that I could run a decent 10K. I'd like to run at least like, if I could run like 28:20 or something, I think that would be good. Good enough.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, even just 403 like mile speed is good in a 10K, except for those races where they just jog for 5 miles and then run like a 410 at the end. But it would be awesome to see you on the track again. I definitely want to get a good marathon in because I messed my first one up. So that's what I'm doing this fall. But after that, I actually have really good training partners that I'm coaching right now that all want to get back on the track. And they're like, a couple of them ran like 48.1 in the 400 in high school and like can run like 150 in the 800 and stuff. And so just to be able to have those guys. And then one of my other runners, Ross, is more of like a, he's more like us, like he's a miler, but he's more of like a 5K 1500 type of guy. And so just to have all those guys and all try to break four or do something crazy like that, it'll be really exciting because it is a lot easier, even though it's way more mileage. To me, it's a lot easier to train for a marathon all by yourself than to try to break four, because you have to do these crazy speed workouts all by yourself. And it's like you can only get so pumped up to run like way under 4 minute pace until you're full of lactic acid, like all alone.
You know? It's like. Yeah. Training for a mile by yourself is really hard. Even doing speed stuff, when I do it by myself and then I'd hop in with some of our 800 guys that I'd be coaching. And I was always, whenever I'd run with them, I'd always be so surprised. I'd look at my watch and be like, what? Did we really just run that fast? It feels so easy. But it's just like when you're running with people at that speed, I don't know. Anytime you're running with people, it seems easier. But really when you're pushing like that, it's like, yeah, you need people. And that's why I do like, another reason I like coaching is because I can hop in with them at like when they're doing 200s or even some hard 400s, and it kind of keeps me fast a little bit. So, and forces me to do some speed stuff that I know I need to do, but I don't, you know, always do it, because you just get into that marathon mentality mode. But it's like staying with the young guys that are trying to race the 800, you know, keeps you sharp. So, and I don't like getting beat in anything. Even the hundreds, we do like some hundreds, and I can't, I mean, they could take me in the 100. It really irritated me, even though I was like, it was like a week after my marathon, I was still pissed, but whatever.
Yeah. You're in marathon mode and you don't want to lose a dash. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we should all break four. Like, I don't care if high schoolers do it and we do it at like 28 years old. Like, I don't care. Like, still cool to say that you're in the sub 4 mile club. Yeah. So, yeah. You and Seth and my guys all have to try to do it at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Well, dude, congrats on the Brooks contract. That's amazing. Congrats on the trials again. The coaching, the house, everything. Super awesome. Thanks for coming on and catching up. And I'm sure we'll keep in touch as your career progresses. And thanks for always coming on the show, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And I'll be following you too, or following you as well. And hopefully your, you know, next marathon goes great.